Welcome back, listeners, to Call That Girl's Remote Support Show. And this is my third show. And I am very excited that I've made it to the third show, which means my first two were somewhat successful, I hope. I'm pretty excited. I've received about 10 fan emails so far. And, you know, I was kind of nervous, as I said in the first show. I wasn't sure what was going to be happening. So I'm getting great feedback. So the show will go on. And just to let everybody know that when I pitched the show to Dor and Cody, they both kind of gave me a little chuckle and said, "How can you do a show on remote support?" And I said, "Well, I'll outline some topics for you." And in about 5 minutes, I emailed, I think, about 40 topics. And they both said, "Okay, sounds good." So I went through the list. I went through the list of all the topics I emailed them, and I've created about 22 shows with all different topics. And as you can see, I've kind of got the format down now. And so we're going to be talking about 22 things coming up, all different. And I'm sure things will be changing because remote support is all about basically supporting our clients, and technology is changing. So it's probably never going to end. So anyway, let's get ready to move on with the show here, and let's see if we can give you folks some tips and tricks to help you succeed with your business and hopefully make some money. And I'm going to start off the show here by saying that I'm sorry that there was a three-week delay in the shows. I've been extremely sick for the last 2 weeks. I started off by getting a flu, and then that lasted at least a week. And let me tell you that when you have the flu and you're sick and you work for yourself, you better have some money saved up because you really can't work. And I had to learn that, years ago when I had staff, you know, the staff kept working when you're sick because you're constantly doing work, right? But when you work for yourself, it's kind of sad because for 2 full days, I had to reschedule all my appointments. So those were non-billable days for me. And I just couldn't even breathe. But on Wednesday through Friday, I kind of caught up a little. I could work a little bit. And I started to get back out there. And I still ended up with a pretty good, decent week with the sales. And because I have things in place to help me make better sales, which is the prepay tickets and upsell opportunities and, you know, better packages and projects. So I was kind of prepared. But, you know, what if I wouldn't have had any sales that week? So just like all computer repair businesses that are one man, one woman shows, you have to have a backup for money, you know, to at least get you through those weeks when you're sick and so you don't be stressed out and freaking out. So one thing I'm going to give you all as a tip is have a little reserve money ready. Well, anyway, then we move on to the second week I was sick, which was just basically me being congested and having a really hard cough, which it's not bronchial at this point, but as you can hear me right now, I'm nasally, and I'm going to stay nasally probably through April because I live in Minnesota and everybody has a cold here 5 months out of the year. So I just said, I'm going to get back to the show. However I sound, I got to get out there, and I actually feel pretty good. So business is back. I took all my appointments last week and I had a great week. And when you have a great week, you just kind of want to get inspired to have another great week. So that caused me this weekend to spend a little time on my business plan and marketing for 2014. Have you prepared your business plan for 2014 yet? Time to get on it, folks. Get some new stuff stirring. Alrighty, so let's start with reviewing the jobs I did do in the last couple weeks. And I've got some interesting ones I'm going to share with you folks. So the first one I want to talk about is printer repairs. And a lot of people don't understand, you know, that you can do a lot of printer repairs remotely without having to go on site. And there's a kind of a trick to printer repair. One is you have to be patient, and you have to be able to see the situation without being there, which means you have to use what I would consider blind troubleshooting. That's how you have to look at it. You close your eyes, you envision the printer. It's, you know, always great to go Google the printer first so you can kind of see it, so you can talk your client through it. But more or less, I only, charge $79 for my printer repairs. And I always give the clause to the client that I have a $40 try fee. So if I book a printer repair, I always say to them, I'm going to charge you $40, even if I can't fix it, because we're going to spend some time on this. Most clients have no problem with that because it's better than, you know, them having to go buy a new printer, and you probably will fix it. And then I have a max fee of $79. Why do I have that max fee? Is because a new printer is $79 usually, or a standard one, you know, at the retail stores. So for my theory is, if I charge $79, that kind of gives me a 45 minute to an hour window to try to fix this printer. And if I can't, because I've been troubleshooting printers for a very long time. So if my theory is, if I can't fix it within an hour, they need to probably get another one. And that's why the price point is set nicely. So people at that hour time, they're like, you know, maybe I should buy a new printer. And then you only charge them $40, then they can go out and buy a new printer. And 9 times out of 10, the new ones are so easy to install, they don't need you anymore. But also, you remember that people with printers have printers that are old, 5 to 8 years old. And, you know, they actually, that's something you should ask them in the beginning, like, how old is this printer? I usually do, because if it's 5 to 10 years old, it might just be time to get a new one. But I did a printer repair, and I wanted to let everybody know that those, you know, usually are fixed by quick, just adding a new printer, reinstalling the drivers, or what I call my simple troubleshooting, which is I have the clients go to the printer, unplug the cord for the power, unplug the cable to the computer if there is one, power it off, make sure there's no power source to it at all, and then I have them reboot their computer, and then after that, the computer's up, I have them plug in the cord again, and then I have them go plug in the power to the printer, cycle it on, and at that point it should work. 9 times out of 10, that's how I fix printers, and it works. So I do have a blog out on my website. I'll have posted in the show notes on how to troubleshoot the printer the simple way. And that might save you a lot of grief, because a lot of people over troubleshoot printers and they're fairly simple. Okay, moving ahead. Boy, I had a call from a client that he calls in about once a year, you know, just has little snaggy things. He's very technical, you know, like he knows how to fix his own things. He calls me when he's in a pinch, and he called me and said he had a kind of a virus, and I was like, all right, you know, so I was troubleshooting it, and I got it. It wasn't even a virus. It was just a redirect toolbar junk thing. But it was about 45 minutes of time, and I decided to, hey, you know, he only calls in once a year. Well, right now, I'm selling a discounted prepaid ticket in November to my past clients at a discounted rate. And I thought, you know, would he be interested in buying it? Because he only calls in once a year, and he's so technical. So at the end of the call, I pitched him and said, hey, you know, I said, hey, I am selling these tickets that might end up lasting you quite a while, but it saves you, you know, on these short calls to give you a discounted rate. And he goes, you know, Lisa, I think I'll buy one. I was like, really? He goes, yeah. And I go, all right, cool. You know, like I said, the guy's been calling in for a few years now, once or twice a year, probably more like once. And I just decided to start pitching my tickets to everybody. And, you know, the thing I found out is, if you don't ask, you don't know. You don't know what people are going to buy unless you ask them. So we can't be afraid of sales if we're going to sell them something that they need and they'll save money on and it benefits them to some degree. So that's an exceptional win for me, because I love selling these prepaid tickets, and they just help, you know, keep the cash flow going, and it secures you some, you know, repeat clients. Okay, what's next on my list here? I had another client this week that, you know, how we're all dealing with these toolbar removal problems, and it's normally brought in by software, and, you know, I think for the most part, all of us kind of have figured out the quick and dirty ways to remove them all. I think, honestly, outside of removing programs from the control panel, I've got it down to about an 8-minute removal. You know, if that's all they have. But see, because I've got all the hiding places figured out, and I just zip through and I do all the browsers and I, you know, check all the extensions of the browsers, and I have it all kind of knocked down, and I, you know, do my quick system restore point, back up the registry, and just get all that done. And, you know, it's the removing of these programs that takes forever. And I've got it down to where I can find them quick. But, you know, you got to remove them. And then sometimes they sneak back in under other programs. And that's why they're almost considered virus removals, even though there's probably no hardcore virus behind them. But anyway, this lady called in. And I think, now I know I do a good job, but she kept calling in with more and more little snaggy issues. And I feel bad for the woman because she just updated her Windows 8 to the 8.1 update too. And that kind of had a problem with something, her online, or her backup. Anyway, so anyway, this stupid toolbar, you know, it can be annoying. And so the one thing that I've always kind of felt is if they pay the fee once and you did your job, okay, and they call back in a few days later and the toolbar is still there or came back, you know, it's kind of like virus removals. You have to have like a set time that you, you know, manage the expectations with your clients to let them know, like, you know, okay, I'm going to give you a 7-day guarantee on this. And then after that, I might have to charge you again. And 9 times out of 10, they're not going to call back because most people just do this download once. They know they did it. They always tell you, yeah, I remember downloading that flash. I remember doing it. And then they're kind of on their game and they watch for that. And I hardly get any callbacks after I help people once. Now, this lady did not do this intentionally. Unfortunately, I just kept finding new spots where these stupid toolbars are hanging out. And I found a new one the other day in Internet Explorer in a search dropdown in the toolbar that I didn't catch before. And there it was hanging out. So I just don't know how much more these are going to keep changing, you know, for us in our field. But I will tell everybody that's listening, you know, if you have a store or a shop or you work out of your home or whatever, you know, go into someone's house to remove these things can absolutely be taken away. You can do these remotely so fast and so efficiently. And, you know, like I said, I got mine down to an 8-minute removal without all the other junk you have to do and clean up and whatnot. But, and then we move ahead to my next client. Then this is the lady I'm going to call the lady that never stops talking. Now, I know you probably are like, oh, two peas in a pod there. But she's the type of client that she works off crying. And she's very, she won't stop talking. And then she starts crying and she works off your emotional, my emotions, I should say, rather. Because she's not in a good financial position. She always asks the right questions to kind of get around it being a billable call. And then I find myself, now she's done this to me twice, I think. And the second time I caught it. But, you know, she just does all this stuff. So after like 20, 30 minutes, I'm like, okay, is this even a billable call? Why did I spend so much time on it? I'm so confused. And this doesn't happen to me too often because this should have been an appointment. You know, but she knows me from years ago. And so she calls, asks all the questions. Finally, I said, you need to take it to a shop because she had no internet. And we tried a couple things we couldn't fix, couldn't get in. And then so she takes it to the shop to get repaired. And the shop I referred her to, I guess the first thing that they did was try upselling her on a new computer, which I just am a little disappointed they did that because, you know, they said, well, she's at the Windows end of life, you know, for XP. She was like, I wasn't prepared to buy a new computer, and that's all they were selling me. And I was kind of disappointed. I was like, just fix the virus for her, you know? Well, when she left, she got her computer and called me back and told me all about her experience with this company I referred her to, which really, except for the fact that they upsold her, they did a good job at removing it and, you know, upselling her on products. And I said, that was fine, you know? And, then I just realized here, I'm spending another 15, 20 minutes with her. And she had some problems that she wanted to deal with the company. And I said, okay, at this point, you have to call the company and deal with that. I'm like, I just know these guys. I'm referring them because you're in the neighborhood. I told you that in the beginning, you know, and part of being a remote support only shop is you can't be there for the on-sites. You don't have a store, and you have to deal with, you know, people with the computers when you can't fix them. And so having a referral circle is really great, you know. And I've talked to the owner of this company. I don't know them that well, but they have a legitimate shop. They have decent prices, and they were nice to me on the phone when I talked to them. So, I mean, when I have to have 20 referring partners to cover a metropolitan area, you know, how much interviewing do I need to do? Especially when you're dealing with a client that's, you know, can be talkative and maybe upset because she cries a lot. So anyway, grain of salt stuff here. But the point is that, you know, when you do remote, you have to have referring partners, and she works off everybody's, you know, this is just an example of a client that we have to deal with in our world. And I still didn't make any money off it at all. So my part of my learning opportunity out of this one is I need to stop her cold in the first 5 minutes and turn it into a booking appointment and see how far I go there. Every week, I think I learn something, folks. It never ends. Just never ends here. Okay, moving ahead. We're still in the week updates. Well, I think that's kind of it. There's always more I could keep going on with, but I got a couple things I'd like to talk about real quick is that I've been noticing with the show here in the fan mail, I'm also getting some new Twitter followers, and my handle at Twitter is @callthatgirl. I got a new follower, which I think is funny, Ubuntu Gnome, which I'm thinking is a Linux Twitter handle. I know enough about Linux. I think Ubuntu is one of the versions. And I went and checked out who they follow and stuff. They were kind of neat. So if you want to check them out on Twitter. And another thing this week that I decided to do, which is part of my news and updates, is I think a lot of you already know this. I'm an Outlook like freak. Love Outlook. I have been supporting it for 14 years. The four years before that, I did other email support for Lotus Notes and Mulberry and Vax and just kind of everything with email. It's my thing. And so I decided that it's time for me to get into the Outlook training game. I love Outlook. I train almost all my clients anyway. And the reason why I started doing Outlook training is because I had some clients say, I'd like to learn how to know how to do more hosted Exchange. So I actually sold a class to a client for $750 to his entire staff. And after that, I was like, you know, I should just try selling more classes. So I put up on my website a calendar for Outlook training and for the text listening. If you're interested in learning more about the hosted Exchange piece, so when you sell it to your clients, you know more about it. It's good for you to know more so you can upsell it and you can also support it. You know, if you don't know everything about the hosted Exchange or just Outlook in general, you know, you can't go wrong learning more about Outlook because your clients, you know, the majority of business clients use Outlook. So it's good for you to learn. I'm having a sale right now for anybody listening to the show. The link will be in the show notes, the Outlook class. I'm offering it for $19 for some time here. So if you have the discount code, you can keep trying it. The code is Outlook 2014, and this the normal sales price is $50 for the class. You can get it for $19. It's a 1.5 hour class with about a half hour of question answer from the, you know, the people attending. It's a good deal, and it gives you some opportunities to learn Outlook from my point of view, which is basically a technical training end. Okay, moving ahead, we have one more update, which I think is funny. I received an invitation to, actually, I didn't receive an invitation. I received something from my Google Plus account, something about something called Helpouts. And if you've heard of the Google Helpouts, apparently it's, you know, people can go to the Helpouts and look for experts or specialists, and they can review people's profiles and go, you know, pay them to help them for a certain fee. And, I was wondering, I was like, why didn't I get an invite to this thing? You know, like, it just kind of bothered me in a little bit because I'm like, sometimes I get invited to these things. So I went back to my Gmail, which I don't really use. And I did find an invite from October 2nd. So I was like, yay, I got an invite early. I just never signed up for it. And because I didn't check my email. But anyway, I did sign up for the help out. And I put up a profile. And I went and looked through it. And I looked at my competition and what they're charging and what other people are doing and charging. And, you know, to be honest with you, I just don't think I'm going to participate in the Google help outs. My, the rates I need to charge were extremely high compared to the other people. And I say extremely high is because I charge a lot for my Outlook work, $129 an hour. And these people were charging like $20 an hour. So I was like, I don't think this is my right target market. You know, so, the Google help outs, you know, I'm not saying it's for a, lower price market, but I can tell you that there's very few people out there charging what us as remote support, you know, computer repair owners would charge. So I don't think it's a benefit for us to lower our rates down to the level to be competitive to gain that kind of audience. Because I'll tell you that when you price your products and your services at the level you need to make a profit, you have to stay there. And you don't undermine your pricing and your services to get to a new market that's priced lower, because that's where you're going to stay then. You know, so I don't recommend doing the help outs if it's going to give you a couple clients at $20 an hour, because that's, it's probably more like, you know, the tire kicker types and the people that don't want to pay more. And I'm not judging. I'm just saying that that's where it appears. That's what it appears to be for me. So I'm going to kind of probably shy away from the help outs. Okay. Now, folks, I'm going to talk a little bit about my ebook. As I've told you in the past, the first edition came out in March of 2011. Third edition came out in November of 2011. There hasn't been an update since. Well, I've spent the last 9 months working on the new book. Had some challenges with it, technology changes and the cloud, and I had to revise my company. And, you know, we're at the point where the book is ready for pre-release, okay? I say pre-release because the final third edition, I'm going to blend the second and third together. So right now, what I'm selling is the second edition. The third edition pre-release is going to be available this week, and it's perfect time for Black Friday. So I'm going to let everybody know that if you click on the link at the bottom of the show notes, I'm having a Black Friday sale for $19 until December 2nd. And this will start as soon as the show's live. So if you see the link, you want to buy it for $19 until December 2nd. That's the deal I'm giving. What you get with this third edition is the pre-release copy. Eventually, when the second and third edition are done and the graphics are done and it's all pretty, you'll get that copy as well. I always recommend reading the second edition first and then the pre-release, because the pre-release is done and there's going to be no more edits to that. You are also going to gain access to a new website I have out that's dedicated to remote support only. It's going to be by subscription only, so only people that have bought the book or that going to buy the book will have access to the site. It's very private for a reason, because that's where I'm going to be putting out the new updates for the book. And it's going to be in a blog feed, and all the people that have bought the book will be in the blog feeds, and they can get the updates as they come out. Our technology and the cloud is just changing too fast for me to just continue to write books anymore. So I'm offering this website as a new way for us to stay together as a community too and support each other. There's going to be a forum in there so everybody can create an account and participate in the forums and ask questions. And it's not going to be like, you know, hey, I need to buy new hardware. You know, what do you recommend? Or, I mean, you know, as a technical hardware forum, no. It's only for remote support only. So it's not going to be, you know, a bench tech with a shop questions to other ones about hardware. Just making that clear. It's a very unique site. And I have a lot of hopes for it. That should be out, available soon too. But anybody that buys the third edition this week will get access to the site. They will get the third edition pre-release and all the templates that I've created to go along with it. And I have about 10 so far. So it's pretty cool. And I actually threw in a couple sample proposals for big and small jobs and hosted Exchange and Office 365 and how to do the transitions. A lot of little upsell opportunities too. So if you're interested, bottom of the show notes, the Black Friday special. Now we're going to move on to my topic selection this week, which I'm calling Building Trust and Money. And it all started with a question from a listener. And this came in prior to me creating the remote support podcast show. And the listener writes in and says, missing your podcast and wondering what happened to it. Well, I had to take a break, but I'm back. I'm finally going to be expanding my remote support services across the country, and I had a couple questions for you. So we're going to start with his questions. Do you have any issues with fraud or chargebacks? My answer is no. In the last 7 years I've been running my company, I've almost never been screwed over. I say a couple times I have because I didn't have the proper processes in place at the time to make sure I didn't get screwed over, which was collecting people's credit cards before I did the job. So tip, that's the best way to not get frauded against, like someone not paying the bill, is collect their credit card, pre-authorize it, and then do the work. I did a $400 job for somebody, partial remote, partial on-site, and he ended up not paying, and I just decided not to chase it. Chargebacks, I'm assuming that they took my money, I took their money, and they, you know, like put a thing on PayPal against me or something and said I didn't do the work. That's never happened. I have had one person put a refute in, though, saying that I overbilled them, but luckily I had all the documentation that proved that the client requested all the work I did and my billing rate for it, and PayPal won in my favor. And then the next question the listener had was, what company do you use for payments? And I do use PayPal. I have found that PayPal is great for a small business. I love everything they offer. I don't mind the fees. I don't mind their payments. And, you know, their payment, I think I pay $30 a month for the service. You know, a lot of other techs have told me, oh, you should just go with the credit card processing. It's so much cheaper. But honestly, I just like consistency and I just know how PayPal works. So, you know, I'm on their virtual, I think it's called virtual machine option, where I can go in and put in the credit card and pre-authorize the sale, which I love that feature, because if I'm taking a call in the beginning for a virus removal and I think there might be an opportunity for me to upsell to a prepaid ticket, I do it as an authorize. And then after the job, and if they buy the ticket, I change it to a sale. And I just love that feature. Just kind of gives me a little hope in the beginning, I guess. Okay, next question. Do you have any issues with customers saying that you broke their system or saying that you didn't do the work properly? You know what? Years ago, yes, when I was less experienced, I would have to say at this point in the game, I'm very clear on my repairs. I'm clear on what they should expect. And I'm clear with end of job, you know. And that comes with learning from my failures. So, like, for example, when you're done with a virus removal, you know, there are going to be broken products maybe afterwards. But are you responsible for their Microsoft Word not working after you repaired a virus? Probably not, you know. The virus probably broke the extension or broke the program. So that's called managing better expectations. You say that at the beginning of the job. You say, well, the virus removal is X amount of dollars, and I'm going to let you know that I'll remove the virus. You know, sometimes even I don't even charge them if I can't remove it, and they have to go to a shop. But that's rare. Let's just keep that off the plate. But, you know, I tell them, you know, just to let you know that some of your programs might not work, or your printer might not work, or, you know, there might be something snaggy still afterwards, and I do charge to fix those issues. And if they say, oh, you mean that's not all included? Say, no, this is not a virus removal and program repair. This is just the removal of the virus. 9 times out of 10, you're just fine. But, you know, we know that viruses can break things. So if you put out that expectation, you should be set. And that comes from learning. The second part, though, that he asked that I didn't do the work properly. At this point, I pretty much do the work properly. So if you're a junior tech or just getting started, you know, you might want to put that into your sales pitch if you don't know what you're doing sometimes, which we all have taken on those kind of jobs. You know, I'm going to try, and you tell the client, I don't know, I don't know your software, but I'm going to try, you know. Well, let's say you try to fix QuickBooks, for example, and, you know, it worked, then you try to fix it, and then it broke, you know, and you gave them the expectation that you're not a QuickBooks specialist, you know, then maybe just reinstalling it fixes it. But at this point in the game, I just feel kind of confident. I've been doing this long enough, and I usually do the work properly or have the expectations set beforehand. And there's still products I support that I don't know. And I have to tell people, I'm a software person, but I don't know everything. So that's when you can throw in and say, well, I'll do the research at no cost. So you can kind of prepare yourself. Then you get to know that product a little better too. Next question he had was, do you have any fraud measures in place to protect yourself? And we're going to answer that by moving into some of the next topics here. Yes, I do. And there's quite a few, actually, you know, just in case a client wants to get all, you know, hey, Lisa, you didn't do all the work right and we're not happy. Is there a clause in your client agreement form? You know, do you have that ready? It's so rare you don't really need it. So the few times that I've had clients that weren't happy in the past few years with the work and my bill, it came down to negotiating a fair price. And the clients, they always want the no pay, which of course ain't going to happen. Then you have to at least cover your costs somehow. And when you work for yourself like I do, you know, I usually bite it the most. But when I had employees, I had to cover, you know, their hourly rate, what I paid them, and a little overhead. So for the most part, you know, it's rare if you don't do a job right that you have to protect yourself like that. But let's get started with the list I made to kind of cover all this. Now, and then we'll talk about the client agreement forms in this list here. That's your overall protector. Before I do any remote work, I think I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again, is, you know, with all the years I've done remote support, it's so rare that when we're done with a job that we have to, you know, go back in time, which is the system restore. But I've been learning lately that the first thing I do when I get into a job is do a restore point. And like I said, years before it didn't matter so much, but lately I'm finding it very critical. So when I remote in and I'm talking to the client, just getting prepared for the job, I just go and set that restore point and I back up the registry like right away and just get that taken care of. There are some tools out there that do these for you automatically when you're remoting in or you run the tool set. I am familiar with those. But I just do that as just like a quick, you know, checkup, make sure I have those in place. And the second thing on the list is the client agreement form, which I believe I put in the show notes last week, but I'm going to put again this week, is, you know, you got to have the clients fill out your client agreement form. Now, I have two different agreement forms. One is for break fix for like home users and day-to-day people. And I also have a new client agreement form, which is for business projects, like bigger ones, you know, like the over $500 projects. And it just kind of goes more in depth about what you're responsible for, terms and conditions, a little more businessy, savvy chat. My general client agreement form, just basically, you know, if you go check it out, you'll see that it covers that I'm not responsible for data loss. I'm not responsible for things breaking. I won't take your data. You know, I'm not in there to steal your things. And it's kind of like a non-disclosure of sorts. And a lot of people like seeing those client agreement forms. I do require all my clients to fill those out before a job. And I think it's very important because it kind of shows your professionalism and that you're standing up for your work. And it takes the clients maybe a couple minutes to put it together or to figure it out. Excuse me. So one thing I've always thought of is, you know, to protect yourself with the clients, you have to be confident and act professional and you'll be treated as such. Now, as you can tell by my personality, I'm kind of a character and I like, you know, going on and on. My clients and I build great rapport from the get-go. And that's why, you know, what works for me is I've kind of got the chitty-chatty thing down, but I have a very high level of professionalism when it comes to when I do the work. You know, so let's pretend someone calls in and they're like, oh, Lisa, I need a new computer and I just am lost and I need all these things. And I'm like, oh, I hear ya. You know, technology today is just so confusing. And I do my get to know them bonding. But then when I start to do the professional side of my job, which is, you know, book the appointment and have them do the client agreement form and take their payment, I turn into, you know, the seriousness. And when you start acting professional, that leaves less room for things such as clients trying to negotiate their own pricing, which sometimes can happen. Because when you're telling them, well, you were looking at $250 for this job and you hear their, you know, oof, really? You got any deals? Can you cut me a break? You're like, well, you know, that's when your emotional side starts kicking in. And you're like, well, I can knock off this for you. And really, there's no room to knock off anything. I mean, you have your prices set for a reason. You shouldn't be, you know, negotiating your price. I mean, there is times to negotiate price if you can't fix something or, you know, the person, you know, has said they have a budget and you can only do so much. I mean, maybe you're like, okay, I'll throw this in for you because of that. But, you know, day-to-day stuff, you should have, you know, your things in order. So when you're being a professional, you know, they are going to treat you as such. And that actually is a way to protect yourself because they aren't dealing with somebody off Craigslist that maybe doesn't, well, I don't mean to say it negatively, Craigslist, but we all kind of know that a lot of those techs on that site have no forms, no insurance, no nothing. They just, you know, they disappear. And, you know, as a respectable support company, you know, you need to showcase that when people call in. Also, when you're doing the remote support job, you know, once you start getting down your shtick of how you start jobs, it becomes really quick to the client for them to recognize, oh, you know, they're pro, they've done this before. I have the same shtick down, I say, every single time. And it's kind of like I feel like I'm the repetitive doctor saying the same thing, you know, but it works. Excuse me. And then you also have your closings. You get the consistency down with that too. And you do your upsells. And that's the professionalism we need to have in our industry to succeed in this field. Next thing I'm going to talk about is be firm with your interview processes. So you need to come up with a consistent, standardized interview that it might be different for everybody, you know, because what I do is different than what you might do. But you have to have your interview process down. And in my ebook, I do have a plenty of examples in the second and third edition that, you know, tell you things to ask, you know, clients that you should be asking them to prepare for the job. And simple stuff like what was happening when this problem happened? Did you install any software prior? Did you see any Windows updates happen? I mean, those are simple things, but you have to kind of maybe have a different interview list too for different kinds of calls. But it's our job to know as much about the job before taking it on to be sure that A, we can do the job. And second is, you know, to make sure that we can be able to handle in a time frame that's affordable for the client. You know, no one wants to take on a blue screen of death and spend 3 hours trying to get through that sucker for it to turn out to be a reload and you got to take it to a shop. You know, it's silly. So the interview process is very important. And also just want to let folks know that sometimes the clients tend to rush to get things going. And so you need to be firm and do it your way because you're in control of the situation. Don't let the clients control the situation. Don't skip steps. Another thing you can do is to protect yourself is to have a 24-hour cancellation fee. And I do have it. I don't always use it, but I have it at least to back me up. And the only time I really do use it is if someone's prepaid and I kind of just sense that they're not going to keep the appointment or whatever. That's why pre-authorizing the credit cards is nice because when you're taking that and you're telling them you're pre-authorizing, you can just step in and say, and by the way, I have a 24-hour cancellation fee. So if you feel the need, you need to reschedule, please let me know as soon as possible. But, you know, you don't need to go into that unless you have an emergency or you're in the hospital or your kid is homesick or you don't need to go into all that junk. Just basically just tell them that because that's another level of professionalism. Your time is worth the billing rate. And if you can't bill during that time, you're losing money and that affects your business and your bottom line. Okay. So moving ahead, if you don't have a lawyer or have had a lawyer review your client agreement form, I always tell folks they can borrow the one on my site that's been looked over by a lawyer, but I'm never going to protect or, you know, no one can sue me on this because I'm just saying it's, you know, it's up to you to have a client agreement form that works for your business. So basically, you can use mine as a template if you need to. It should work, but you should have a lawyer review it. And most lawyers, to review a simple client agreement form, it should be about an hour of their time. And I've had two different lawyers look at my client agreement forms. One early on in my company, and then, well, actually three. I had one early on, one in the middle, and one just recently. So it's something that I put into my company, is I pay for that legal advice. So that's one thing you want to do to protect yourself is have a good client agreement form and have it reviewed and make sure that it covers you, okay? The next question is, should you have insurance? And that can be determined by you and if you feel you need insurance. A lot of people don't feel they need to because they're protected with client agreement forms. They're protected in other ways. I just leave that one kind of open. And a lot of people have shops and that covers theirs. You might want to talk to an insurance agency to say, you know, here's what I do, here's what I'm responsible for, and to find out if they can even cover you. I know that there's a lot of different plans out there. They're hard to, consultants, from what I've heard, have a hard time getting insurance to protect data. Like if a consultant is out there just doing that, or a shop that does remote only, because it's not in the shop if there's a fire or theft or whatever. Moving ahead, it's called giving good expectations. And I've already talked about that earlier, is, you know, you have to kind of figure out as you fail, sometimes your expectations. And I think that for a lot of people, like me especially, I've learned from my failures. So I've learned what to say and how to react to people. And, you know, one example I had was this week, I was working on a proposal for a client. I spent, well, I think probably almost 2 hours, and it was about a $2,100 proposal, maybe $2,500 when it'd be all done. And I spent a lot of time with him going through all of the needs of his company. We're moving everything to the cloud. And so he bought part of the project first, and then he said, we're going to come back and buy the other half. And I'm okay with that because it was a two-part project. But the expectations I should have put out was me working with him for those 2 hours is kind of equal to what a managed IT company would do when they came to his office, which would give him an assessment. So after I won the first part of the job, he goes, well, I expect you to come up to my office now and do an on-site at no charge. And I was like, well, I just spent like 2 hours going through all of your, going through everything with you. So I think that kind of equals it. But that was something I should have said in the beginning, and now I just learned. So if that happens again, I'm going to have to say that. So now if I come to your office, it's all billable because at the office, I'm actually going to be doing work because we already bought new computers and got that all lined up, and I don't need to do anything on site. So anyway, I still have to tell the client this and so he understands, but next time I know. And that's protecting myself from not losing money. Let's see. Now the next one is doing good follow-up calls. And I'm kind of bad at this. I will never admit something that I don't do, but I should be doing. So I'm just going to tell you all, I've done follow-ups in the past. It's very hard for me to stay consistent with this because I'm so busy with my day-to-day. But I am looking for a new marketing assistant to help me with follow-up calls. And so it's a tip for anybody that's in a, you know, maybe a possible growing spurt that needs help with some marketing stuff is to find someone to do your follow-up calls. And in the past, what I've done is we just ask them if their repairs are still okay, if they need any more help, because I'd rather help them sooner than later, and if they would refer us or give us a testimonial. And like I said, I've only done it a couple times in the past. It can get very confusing too, but I do recommend it. And that's a way to protect yourself from bad press or bad referrals or unhappy clients not coming back to you and spreading the bad word, what their experience was like, when it could be maybe be easily fixed. Okay, we're getting close to the end here. A couple more tips. is be responsible and be upfront again with your repairs you can handle or not. If you want to take on something you've never done before, always give that expectation to the client. I'm willing to learn it on my own dollar and then help you. People love that because people really want remote support if you're offering it, but sometimes you just don't know everything. You know, I mean, all software is different. Even easy programs like Picasa. I mean, I don't even know how to run that thing, and I've installed it plenty of times for people. They know how to run it. I just install it. But I always tell them that. I always say, well, I don't know Picasa, but I can install it, and I just don't understand why they can't install it. But either way. So prepare for your jobs, do your research, and do as much as you can. And be prepared. This is my final topic about protecting yourself, is be prepared for clients to lie a little bit to you and not tell you everything. And as part of the protecting yourself thing is, I don't think they mean to lie, but they do. And basically, you know, if you even put in your interview process, you know, what happened right beforehand, when you're trying to fix it, something later is going to come out. And it's always something like, well, I guess, yeah, I did have something happen. You know, I should have told you before. And after you spent a certain amount of time trying to fix something, then you realize that all the work you just did was for nothing because of something they told you. And you have to be patient with those people because they don't mean to lie, but sometimes they do because they don't know what to say and they're afraid. And they're afraid mostly of their bills being really big. That's the biggest fear, I think, for people is they don't want to have a $400 bill to fix things. Alrighty, folks, that rounds up our topic today of building trust and money, which is also how to protect yourself, I guess. I'm not sure if that's the best topic, but anyway, I'm going to close up here with some remote support tips, a couple more, and just that friendly reminder again that you need to start marketing end-of-life XP to people. I'm getting more and more computer buying jobs, and here's what I do is people call or email me, and they do it a lot. Lisa, I'm looking for a new computer. What do you recommend? Should I buy this? Should I buy that? Here's what I like. Should I buy this one, that one, blah, blah, blah. And the first thing I do is email or tell them on the phone. I say, well, you know what? Let's schedule an appointment for me to help you buy a computer. I'm going to charge you approximately $69, which is a half hour. I'll charge you for that. I'm going to save you money and give you a list of things that you can look for when you go shopping. And you buy it on your own or we can buy it online together. And they buy it. And they buy it, and then they go buy the computer, and then you have an opportunity to upsell them yet more services to help them with their products and get them set up. You can also warn them about buying warranties, that you can do the support. You can also sell them your antivirus, your online backup. You know, I also tend to tell people that if they get a new computer and they want me to do all the data transfer and backup, that we're looking at a 2 to 3 hour job, and people do buy them. So one little email that comes in about how to buy a computer can turn into a 4 hour job. And I love those calls. Okay, folks, it's time to close the show. This is, we're at about the 50 minute mark. And if anybody has any questions, feedback, you can email me, lisa@podnuts.com. Remember to check out the show notes at the bottom. And remember to try to keep me on your Black Friday shopping list. As soon as the link's up, you can go ahead and purchase my ebook for $19. And I have an upsell for the social media ebook and the manual of operations for an extra $10 total for this Black Weekend sale running from the 29th through December 2nd. And I appreciate everybody for listening. Feedback's been great. I'm enjoying the show, and I want to thank Dorgan and Cody for bringing me on, and I wish everybody a great Thanksgiving weekend, and take care.